If you were not afraid, would you be? What would you do? Maybe more importantly, if we were not afraid, who would we be? What would we do? I invite you to think about that question this morning while we consider Psalm 46 and the idea of God being our refuge.
Colin, I've got the children.
Oh, see, she's pretty good at stuff. Children, you were dismissed to your face. Everyone, we had camp awesome. We did not want to sit in this guy. So God is our refuge. Not just mine, not just yours, but God is our refuge and our strength. This is the God who will surely find us in times of trouble, when the world is in an uproar, when the whole cosmos feels like it's coming unglued, whereas the Old Testament talks about it in a couple places, as if it's becoming uncreated. God is there. God's there, and turns out has been there all along, but now maybe you are noticing, because all the other things we typically turn to in situations that are frightening no longer feel sufficient. God's not a fortress, or a refuge, pardon me, it's not a fortress, but in other places the Bible speaks to God being a fortress as well. Both are places of safety. A fortress, however, conjures up images of a walled city, a place to hide from one's enemies, a bubble of protection that's meant to keep us insulated from all potential harm and injury, and maybe give us a chance to heal our wounds. A refuge is also a place of safety, but not in the same way. The word used here in Psalm 46 reflects something more like a shelter that we settle into, rather than a fortress to hide in. In the shelter of God's presence, the writer implies, we're not walled off from harm. It's there. It's all around us. We can see it. And it doesn't seem like it's going away. Instead, in that shelter, we're learning to trust God's power and purpose, rather than giving into fear, or living in fear, or allowing that fear to simply rule our lives. Within God's shelter, we're learning to actively hope in and align ourselves with God's intended future, rather than be overwhelmed by all the anxiety and worry. When God is our refuge, it leads to our healing, and not simply our hiding. As I've been thinking about this text all week and watching our country continue to come unglued, at least it seems in some ways, I'm reminded that there's a difference between being appropriately afraid in a moment and living in fear. Appropriate fear pays attention and shows concern when a needed situation or circumstance is likely to cause harm to ourselves or someone around us. In such cases, fear does its work. It prompts us to make an adaptive response for our own safety or for the good of others. Fear helps us get ourselves and others out of jam. Psalm 46 is pointing or points more to our tendency to live in constant fear. The world is in an uproar. Our lives feel like they're just coming apart. And we're feeling overwhelmed, this persistent, unrelenting anxiety or worry about ourselves and the world, because everything around us feels like it's in disarray. And now we feel like we're in disarray. We're out of order with our true selves, hindered in our life with God, and no longer living in harmony with the future that God intends for us. And we feel vulnerable. Fragile. And while the scary things around us may be terrifyingly huge, the psalmist argues that the problem is not so much the immensity of the challenge, but the fact that we've forgotten or have not cultivated the Somewhere along the way, we forgot what it means to genuinely know God, to settle in to God's embrace, and to live within a loved community of companions who are learning fearless trust, learning to become resilient, and living with integrity regardless of what's going on around us. It seems to me that outside of that experience, it feels natural to be afraid, because there's fearful stuff all around us. It's the air we breathe, or at least the unwanted message that we receive from others. More and more, I'm convinced that the engine that powers nations is fear. Here in Psalm 46, they rage and fall. In the 500 or so other places that the nations are talked about in the Bible, they're often trembling and warring and conquering and being conquered, and battling false gods and being scattered. And though they're never beyond God's redeeming love, there's always an invitation for them, for these nations to come and find their freedom and their wholeness and their peace under the reign of God. More often than not, they find themselves in the midst of conflict, in fear, and self-protection, and defending themselves. There are certainly exceptions to this in world history. It seems like nations sometimes ebb and flow depending on the era of how much they live in this and cultivate the sense of fear. But it sure seems popular nowadays. And not just here at home. We're constantly being told by countries all around the world, we need to fear our enemies. We need to fear that the possibility of the economy could tank. We need to fear the masses that apparently are hovering at the border about to overwhelm us. And that's, again, not just here. And we have bought into the message that there is this growing list of thems, you know them, that are out there, of people that we need to be afraid of, waiting to do harm to us, waiting to infringe upon our rights, waiting to take what's ours. Back in 1776, John Adams wrote that the happiness of a society ought to be the end goal of government. The happiness of a society ought to be the end goal of government. It sounds like a great thing, doesn't it? And I'm going to throw in that part of the main responsibility is to ensure the well-being of the most vulnerable. But Adams also said and was convinced that, quote, fear is the foundation of most governments. Fear is the foundation of most governments. It's how nations harness compliance and hinder dissent. When a nation evokes fear, its people are more likely to conform and stay silent, become less cohesive, less collaborative, and less resilient. In contrast, Psalm 46 is a song of fearless trust. It serves as an anthem of resistance against the fear caused by raging nations. It's a resolution to settle ourselves so deeply into the life and power of God that we learn to remain calm and act with clarity and act with integrity despite the chaos and confusion that is swirling all around us. God is our refuge and our strength. A helper who is always found in times of trouble. Therefore, we will not be afraid, meaning not just we won't feel afraid, but we will not act in fear. Though the earth trembles and the mountains topple, and into the depths of the sea, and the waters roar and foam, and the mountains quake with its turmoil. There's a river, its streams delight the city of God, which is an interesting metaphor because if Jerusalem is in mind here, Jerusalem has a river that runs into it. Unlike all the major cities back in those days, Jerusalem has a river. The river in this context is the life-flowing power and presence of God. And this makes it a holy place for the Most High, and God is within this place, and that city, that people, will not be toppled. God will help her when the morning dawns, which is the time when adversaries tend to attack, which feels like every day for lots of people, I'm afraid. Nations rage, kingdoms fall, but at the voice of God, the earth itself melts. The Lord all-powerful is with us. The God of Jacob is our stronghold. This is a glad response by a people who understand that God opposes the proud and self-reliant. But God is the shelter for people who are interested in a longer living with the earth and finding their home in God. And so this fearless community then has the courage to say, come on and see the fearsome things that God has done on the earth. I love this. They're so fearless that they're willing to gladly invite others into that community. God is a refuge for the oppressed and distressed, says Psalm 14. And those who belong to him are called to near this refuge by defending the vulnerable, says Proverbs 14. So the invitation is to come and belong, and more than that, to come and learn together with us what it means to no longer be afraid. Our God makes the war cease all over the world. The Lord breaks bows and shatters spears and burns shields. I've been thinking about this because I was interviewed by a Quaker Life magazine, which is, as you imagine, has huge readership of tens of people. This week, because I had given a lecture about some of my themes, and they said, do you really believe that God breaks the bones and shatters the spears in our world? And to me, the answer is absolutely. But if you believe that our simply telling nations to put down the weapons is the way forward, it seems like we don't really understand. Because they don't care about God. They're there to defend themselves. If you take seriously a passage like Isaiah 2, it says that as the law goes out, and as law gets lived by God's community, and is taught and practiced and embodied, then the nations may likely lay down their weapons. Then the spears will be shattered. Swords will be turned into plowshares, but it's not until it becomes a community who embodies this reality that it has the capacity, I believe, to be a sort of transforming difference around the world. But in this case, God says to all, to everyone, calm down. Calm down. Stop fighting and know that I am God, exalted among the nations, exalted among the earth. The Lord all powerful is with us. God of Jacob is our stronghold. The more common rendering of the text is be still, which is more than learning to be quiet or in occasion being silent, but to be still. To be still in Hebrew is the word rapha, which means to let go or to release or to fully surrender. It even goes so far as to become weak in order to truly learn to rely on and know the power of God. Be still. Then, maybe only then, we really come to know that life-saving, life-transforming power that has the capacity to alter our lives, to make us fearless, to give us integrity, to shatter the bow and spear that we would otherwise defend ourselves with. We often use this passage from Psalm 46 as an invitation to worship or meditation, which is not inappropriate. But it's really an invitation to open ourselves to that life-transforming power of God. Not just in our own personal lives, but in our corporate life. Our collective life. This is where a Hebrew vision of spirituality is much deeper than ours, where we tend to think about it in terms of radical, individualistic terms of how I relate to God on a personal level, and that I'm an autonomous individual, often disconnected from other people. Their vision was to be a community, a people gathered, people being formed by the presence of God in their lives. We're people belonging to God on a shared journey where together we're trying to learn the will and way of God. As I've been thinking about this image of a refuge over the last few weeks, the picture that keeps coming to mind is a rock tumbler. In God and within the beloved community, we're being reformed and made more beautiful, more true, and far away more like Christ than we could ever be on our own. It's a collection of different people, some with pointy edges. But it's not until we are together in God's presence where we have to and get to rub shoulders with each other and work things out and serve side by side and stand together in the face of those storms and those threats that come to us, that's where we begin to change. That's when we learn to no longer be afraid. That's when we learn to trust in God rather than the weapons of war and violence and other forms of coercion that we attempt to use. It means learning to yield my sense of self and our sense of self to the will and way of God, that surrender part. It means learning to grow together in faith and love and compassion and courage and integrity and truth. And it means doing more than seeking our refuge in God. It means inviting others. By inviting others, any others, all others who may be afraid and who may, God willing, even want to learn how to no longer be afraid, inviting them into that mix. As we talk about finding and being a refuge for others, do we imagine ourselves mostly as a fortress? Wall around us where we are protected, a protected bubble, where we live together more as a rock tumbler, a crucible in which beautiful lives are formed, where fearless trust is formed, where we expect and invite the help of others so that we might shine brighter, and most of all, where together we learn to let ourselves go into the hands of the living God, who never ever promised to be safe, only good. God is there for our goodness. I think we're going to get chances over the next several months to lean into that and think about the shape and direction of our life together. So I invite us, as we continue to worship, to gather in the silence, in the quiet, hopefully in the stillness, as we, as individuals and collectively, release ourselves to the presence of God. If you feel led to share a message this morning, please raise your hand.